Welcome to the Navigator newsletter podcast for the month April 2016, or if you follow the Cometic calendar, the year is 6250. This podcast is narrated by Ifeomi Grant and is brought to you in three parts.
Greetings, this is Ifeomi Grant, and welcome to the April edition of the Navigator podcast and newsletter. Welcome. Okay, this is an issue that I know some of my readers, stroke listeners have been looking forward to, where we're going to look at the Donald Trump candidacy for President of the United States. For the readers amongst you, you're going to be at an advantage, so I'd really recommend actually that those of you who just normally listen to the podcast, after you've listened to the podcast, also take a look at the written version, because there's a number of web links that are included in the written version, and obviously it's very difficult for me to communicate those verbally. So please do have a look at that. I'm going to start off with a confession. The confession is I'm back to my bad old ways in terms of length of the newsletter and podcast. This is not a diet version, it's a super full-fat version, but I think that some of the issues I'm covering need detailed explanation, and there's just no way to give you a proper explanation and keep it short. So apologies for that, but I'll split it into two parts, and so you'll be able to sort of listen at your leisure. Okay, so one of the things I want to do, apart from talking about Donald Trump, and I will eventually get to him, but one of the things I want to do is to give you some background on some recent presidents. So we're going to cover three presidents, President Bill Clinton, President Bush, George W. Bush, and we'll also touch briefly on his father, and President Barack Obama. And then we'll get on to Donald Trump. And I want to help you to see the real power behind the throne, and also to understand that these national politicians have become little more than front men under the New World Order. But before we get into this, just to tell you what's in this issue of the podcast. So the first thing I'm going to cover is about my new e-learning platform, which is nearly ready. And then we'll go on to the headline issue, which is why most Africans in America deserve a Trump presidency. So before we get on to Trump, my new e-learning platform, I'm really pleased to be able to tell you that we're making good progress with the platform. But before we put the finishing touches to it, I want to get your feedback. So if you've got a pen or a good memory, the new site is blackfinancialfitness.com, blackfinancialfitness.com. So when you get a chance, please go and have a look at the site, navigate the pages. Not all the links are working yet, but it's ready enough for you to be able to look at it and get a sense of what we're going to be offering. I want to get your feedback on both the design and also the aesthetics, as well as the ease of using the site. Can you navigate it easily? I've designed a short SurveyMonkey survey. If you go to the written version, you can get the link there and you can answer the questions. Once again, it's very short, only six questions. I do keep my surveys long, even if the podcasts aren't. I do keep the survey short, even if the podcasts aren't. Go to the SurveyMonkey survey. Answer the questions. They'll be really, really helpful to me. The last question is a comment question. So anything that's not covered in the previous questions, you can just give me some written feedback. And then I can pass that on to the designers and we can, you know, make whatever tweaks or refinements we need to make. So please go to blackfinancialfitness.com and then you can help me in finishing off the platform, and we can launch it in May. And yeah, I'm really excited about it, and I really hope you're going to participate in the platform. Now, one of the things that became clear in the last survey, because I sent out a previous survey, which was about getting a sense of what kind of content people are looking to access. So I used the model of the five-legged stool. Remember, I had the four-legged stool, which I'd created in my book, Buy Now, Pay Later. And I've created a five-legged stool, added another leg for stability, and so this is the stall about personal finance and community economic development, which basically starts off with consumption stroke spending, debt reduction, saving, investment and production. So that last survey was around those sort of five areas. And then we finished off with asking people whether they would be interested in becoming an affiliate for the website. What became clear was that people weren't really clear what being an affiliate means or entails. So I'm just going to briefly explain that to you. So what does an affiliate not entail? So this is what it doesn't entail. It doesn't entail any costs. So it's completely free to become an affiliate. It's not a time limited offer. It will never cost you anything. It doesn't involve selling to people. You don't have to ring them up. You don't have to harass them. You don't have to stop them in the street. It also does not involve delivering any courses or gaining any expertise in financial literacy or business development. So that's what an affiliate does not involve. What becoming an affiliate does involve is you sign up and become an affiliate for free. You receive a unique affiliate web link, so you know, a sort of URL, which is yours. And you do what you might already be happy to do, that is to tell people that my site exists and that you'd recommend it. And you do that and you share your affiliate link. Now you can share the link via email, text, maybe your own if you've got your own newsletter, your own website. You can use social media. And that's all the work you do. I mean, you may be sending out emails to people anyway. You may just put the affiliate link at the bottom and say, by the way, if Aomi's new e-learning platform's up, take a look at it, have a look, put the affiliate link there. And then if people sign up, bingo, you'll get 30% of the course or program fee that they pay. So all it involves is you spreading the word about blackfinancialfitness.com and you get paid when I get paid. So it's a win-win-win process. You get paid for a process that involves very little effort. I get paid as new people I didn't have contact with find out about my work and join courses. And the learners win as they develop their skills and financial literacy. And I would just highlight for you that there's a money-back guarantee with the Financial Fitness website. So that means that anybody who joins a course or program as a learner, if they're not completely satisfied with what they got out of the course, they can get their feedback. There's no loopholes, no quibbles, no arguments. They just email me and say, I'm not happy, want my money back. I'll give them their money back straight away. I want to do that because in that way, there's no recrimination. There's no sort of blowback. There's no reputational damage to myself or to you if you recommend the site to them. So there's a money back guarantee so people can, you know, buy with confidence. And I'm very confident that they won't want their money back because they'll get more than the value of what they've invested. Please also note that organizations can become affiliates and they can simply share their affiliate link with their members or other contacts. And in the process, again, if people join courses, they can generate income for their organizations as well. So that's what's involved in becoming an affiliate with blackfinancialfitness.com. The affiliate link isn't on the website as yet, but it will be up when the website goes live. Okay. So that was just the introductory bit of plug-in for my for the new platform. And I hope you will share the message with people. But let's get on to the main meat and potatoes, or you know, vegetarian options are available, portion of this this podcast. And that is why most Africans in America deserve a Trump presidency. Okay, so we've got Donald Trump, the man whose family name is a colloquialism for passing wind. And he looks all set to gain the Republican nomination. And whilst at this stage, I do think he's unlikely to be favourite in a runoff with Hillary Clinton, who looks highly likely to get the Democratic nomination, I wouldn't completely discount his chances of gaining the presidency, because Hillary Clinton, there's not really a huge amount of love for Hillary Clinton in large swathes of the US population. And so a lot of people would vote for her through gritted teeth, I think, if she was running off against Trump. So in this issue of the podcast or newsletter, I'm going to tease out why the provocative title. I'm going to explain how 50 years of political and economic failure by Africans in the US means they're vulnerable and defenseless against the depredations of their fellow citizens, be they occupiers of high or low positions. And I'm going to show you that Donald Trump is really the encapsulation or the representation and metaphor for this failure, as overt white supremacy pulls off his sheepskin coat and bears its blood-soaked fangs. You have to remember that when African rabbits and European wolves sit down at a dinner table, there's only ever one thing on the menu, and it's definitely not Wolf. So Donald Trump's seemingly unstoppable candidacy, certainly for the Republican nomination, it represents both the triumph of personality politics as well as a clear indicator of the deep anger and despair of much of white America. Now, white America has experienced what it's like to be African American, really, because they've been economically ravaged by corporations and their political stooges. And they're now being forced, many of them, to live low on the hog, so to speak, along with the Negroes whom they despise. Because remember, they used to have that saying about living high on the hog. And we know that Africans were forced to live low on the hog and literally eat pigs' trotters and all these kind of things during enslavement and afterwards. So the white sheeple have found a new demagogic shepherd, and they like his rough, tough rhetoric. The demographic tide is running against white America, you might be aware. So, you know, United States is becoming less European ethnically in terms of its population. However, don't count them out yet. They're not done. And we should also note the large number of Hispanics who've been supporting Trump during many of the primaries. And that's maybe a surprise to some Africans. And so Negro hopes of a white liberal and black-brown coalition defeating Trump are not entirely certain. Most Africans in the US cannot get it through their self-hating, inferiorized, thick skulls that they have no friends or allies in the US. No one likes them and no one cares about them. So-called non-white Hispanics want acceptance from whites, not blacks. And Asians in the United States have never ever wanted any part of Africans in the US apart from access to their wallets and purses as consumers. And that they've achieved with great skill. Now, since the civil rights era in the 1950s and 60s, Africans in the US have made social contact and gaining acceptance from European Americans as their number one and almost only political priority. And I've written about this and spoken about this. You know, that Europeans are African psychological reference group on numerous occasions. Now, in the US, in the UK, when Tony Blair was prime minister, when he gained office, he used to have a mantra which was education, education, education. And in the United States, the Negro mantra is integration, integration, integration. This is the Negro mantra and dream. Our so-called leaders or misleaders in the US thought they'd agreed a Faustian pact with white America. What we had agreed, they thought, was we agreed to sacrifice our children, particularly our sons, at the altar of white supremacy in return for government jobs and tokens of acceptance. However, things have changed. And as the high-paying manufacturing and technical jobs have been deliberately offshored by US corporations, this started first as a trickle following Nixon coming into accommodation with the Chinese when he was president. And then it came as a torrent following the abandonment of economic communism in China and India, and America slowly degrading into a Mac economy. And the compact's been well and truly broken, and the American prison gulag system has been vastly expanded to soak up the young black male labour pool who are surplus to requirements with their underdeveloped technical and social skills. And I'm going to talk about prisons a bit later on. And prisons have also proved a quite useful job creation scheme for economically depressed, overwhelmingly white towns, so much so that these type of places actually compete to have a prison built near them for the jobs. Meanwhile, black fathers have incrementally been replaced by government welfare checks across the United States. So we've had a war on African people that's been waged under such slogans as the war on drugs by both Democratic and Republican presidents, particularly starting with Ronald Reagan. But still, Africans in the US just absolutely refuse to take their heads out of the sand. That's a polite way of putting it. I think their heads are somewhere else, but we'll be polite. They still tell their children, get a good education and get a good job, which is what I was told, actually. However, they're not even doing a very good job of equipping their children to complete the first part of the task. They still vote for Democratic politicians, regardless of character or competence, despite these politicians delivering virtually zero benefits to them. And they still believe in the American dream, even though it's generally been a nightmare for Africans. They make absolutely no demand of politicians, except that they don't disparage black people publicly, although you can attack black men as deadbeat dads, that's okay. And that's about it. Stroke our egos a little and we'll vote for you. That's the message from the so-called black voter. Every other group in the United States sees their votes as bargaining chips. Africans see them as tokens of self-esteem. So what I'm going to do now is look at the last three US presidents, including the current incumbent. And we'll be able to see that, nuances aside, none of them cared a jot about the condition of Africans in the US. And the response of that voting constituency, African people, was based upon little other than conditioned partisan loyalty and a combination of political stupidity, cowardice, and treacherous leadership from the head Negroes in charge. So let's move on to the first president we'll look at, and we'll kind of move from the past more to the present. So we'll start with William Jefferson Clinton, Bill Clinton. And you have to give it to Bill Clinton, a good old boy from Arkansas. We're told he's from a town called Hope, which was, I don't know if that's a reality, perhaps it was. He was one of the most intelligent and charismatic presidents in the history of the United States. He's got the gift of the gab, he's got tremendous memory and an ability to connect with people on an individual basis. And I can recall Tony Blair used to say that Bill Clinton could cry out of one eye, such was his ability to emote on cue. And if you actually go and look up some video on YouTube, you can see him go into the funeral of the, I think it was Secretary of Commerce, Ron Brown, who's an African man who's in his cabinet. And as he comes out of his car, he's laughing. And then when he sees the camera, he immediately switches to mourning mode and almost wipes a tear from his eye. It's so cynical, but you almost have to laugh. I mean, that was Bill Clinton, the most cynical of politicians. Clinton was also the first US president to appear completely at ease in the presence of large numbers of African people. And for that, how Negroes loved him. He and his wife Hillary were as corrupt a president and first lady as have ever occupied those positions. And I'll touch on that in a minute. I mean, you can go onto YouTube and you can find numerous videos. Now, I will say that many of them are Republican hit pieces, but others are not. And they expose the Clinton's long history of corruption dating back to his days as governor of Arkansas. There are allegations of financial corruption as well as sexual scandals, and they go way beyond adultery, which you may be familiar with the issues of adultery in Bill Clinton, but they go way beyond that to allegations of rape by Bill Clinton and sexual abuse committed by Hillary Clinton. Now, these scandals continue to dog Bill Clinton, as you know, through his presidency. But now let's think about how he became president in his runoff against George Herbert Walker Bush, H.W. Bush, W's father. And during the final run-up in 1992, Clinton sent a clear message to white America. And he did this when he returned to Arkansas to confirm the death sentence on a mentally disabled African prisoner, Ricky Ray Rector, who's on death row. Now, you can read the full story about this in an article entitled Bill Clinton Killed a Black Man to Become President. Now, the article was written by somebody who claims to have worked on the Clinton 1992 presidential campaign. He doesn't put his name up on the website. But what he says was that in 1992, I worked for the Clinton campaign. And though employed in a minor capacity, word filtered down even to me that Bill Clinton intended to put to death a black man as a way to dog whistle to white racists that he knew how blacks should really be treated. And so Bill Clinton put to death a black man so mentally impaired that when led to the death chamber, he left behind his pie, believing that after his execution, he would return to consume it. In putting to death this black man, Clinton committed an act that some 10 years later, the Republican-dominated US Supreme Court would rule occurred in clear violation of the United States Constitution, and the web links in the written version to the article. Now, the context for this act by Clinton is that in 1988, the then President, George Herbert Walker Bush, who he was running against in 92, Sorry, he wasn't actually the then president. He was the then vice president, because obviously Reagan had been the president up to 88, and George Herbert Walker Bush was the Republican nominee, and he was running off against Clinton. And he had used, back in 1988, when he was running against Michael Dukakis, he had used Willie Horton, who was a black man, who was a convicted murderer, who was released on a weekend furlough and then committed a rape and a stabbing. He used Willie Horton as the fear figure and the hate figure to defeat the so-called liberal Mike Dukakis in the 1988 presidential campaign. And he did this by presenting images of Willie Horton and saying basically that Dukakis was soft on crime, which we all know was code for soft on black crime. And again, I've got the full article from the New York Times in the written version. So Bill Clinton was determined to avoid the same sort of charge. And so he offered up the hapless Ricky Ray Rector as the black sacrificial lamb to be slain at the altar of white supremacy. And with this symbolic execution, Clinton proved to whites that whilst he may smile with Negroes, he was no nigger lover. So these actions were in keeping with Clinton's true ideology, which is that he had very little ideology. He was very much a pragmatic politician, rather than his faux liberal rhetoric. Clinton introduced mandatory minimum sentencing, three strikes and you're out, which means that on your third felony conviction, you received a mandatory life sentence, to preside over the greatest increase in the US prison population in history. Now, in part two, I'm going to go on and talk to you about what Clinton did in terms of mass incarceration.